You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, welcome to Ooh to Be a Terrier for the final time. It looks like Stephen Chicken here, joined by David Hartrick. How are you doing, Dave?
Yeah, very good, mate. It's quite sad in some respects, but quite exciting in others.
Yeah, if you listen to last week's show or you've seen us on Twitter, you'll know that although this podcast is ending, this podcast is not ending, if we can put it that way. So we will no longer be on... Ooh to Be a Terrier will no longer be on this podcast feed because it looks like as of this week I will not be an employee of Reach PLC anymore. I will not be writing for the Examiner, so Sunderland will be my final game for the Examiner, and then on Friday we will launch our new venture, which we've settled on a name for. Dave, for various reasons we can't continue to call it Ooh to Be a Terrier. And we were going to call the project The Terrier, and then I woke up literally the morning after we recorded the podcast last week at about 5 a.m. and went, I think the club call their program The Terrier, and got up and checked, and they do. So we've racked our brains, we've tried to come up with a good name for this project, Dave, and we've not been able to do it. So instead we're going to call it We Are Terriers.
Or WAT, as the kids are calling it.
Exactly. So it will be weareterriers.substack.com. I've literally just changed the URL for that. So if you want to subscribe, and by the way, we've been blown away by how many people have expressed interest in subscribing to our service. We'll detail in a moment what you get for that. But first, I want to say we are sort of blown away by how many people have expressed interest. We'll see how many of you actually put your payment down on Friday when we launch. But for £5 a month, you will be getting continued access to Dave and I doing a podcast on Huddersfield Town, and we're not expecting anything really in terms of the format or content to change. And you'll also get two quality pieces a week, written pieces from me, extremely readable format, delivered to your inbox, all readable in the browser at weareterriers.substack.com. So that will be throughout December. It will mostly be five conclusions. The conclusions will be included as one of those sort of two quality pieces a week. And the first lot will be the Sunderland conclusions, which will be with you on Friday. We'll also have a podcast for you weekly as long as the season is on. If you know, we get to the summer months, we'll see. But certainly for the time being, that will be what you're getting. So head over there to sign up if you've not already, to express your interest. And then you'll be the first to hear when we launch on Friday and get the email nagging you to subscribe properly with the £5 a month level, which we think is good value, Dave.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we want to keep going with the podcast. And what I want to assure people is if you are a fan of this podcast, then the new podcast, you are completely shielded and protected by our laziness. There will be no change to the format. There will be very little change to the schedule. It'll be exactly the same. And, you know, I'm saying that in jest, but we know the podcast is the thing we always get lots of really nice comments about. And it's one of the things we wanted to carry on. Steve wants to carry on doing some writing covering Huddersfield Town. But to be frank, there is no need to do the sort of, I'm not going to say filler pieces or anything like that, but the smaller pieces and the smaller stories. We will, I think it's also worth saying, if something major happens, we're not just going to go, oh, well, we'll talk about it when we do next week. We will be reacting to it. And you will also get the occasional written piece off me, doing some sort of analysis or looking at something, or heaven knows, to be honest with you. But for £5 a month, we kind of thought we didn't want to price it ridiculously high or anything like that. We just think £5 a month is more than enough. The reason that we've come to that figure is it's not arbitrary. It's basically a figure that means we can sort of keep going because we now have to pay for everything, equipment wise and everything else.
Yeah, we travel to the games. Yeah. You know, I've had to buy a new laptop, etc.
Yeah, we are. You need to understand that £5 a month does not buy me and Steve a Rolls apiece and a shiny gold mansion. Absolutely far from it. But we were kind of trying to find a level where it felt like good value and we'd get enough people who hopefully will sign on. But we're kind of, it's sad because we love doing this podcast and we feel like we've built it up to a certain point and it really does punch above its weight in a lot of respects. And that's why we just didn't want to let it die. And, you know, Steve wants to continue writing about Huddersfield Town. We both want to continue covering Huddersfield Town. So, yeah, sign up, please.
Yes, exactly. And I want to be clear that what you're going to get is sort of that two quality pieces a week and the podcast. I'm not necessarily going to be sitting here, and in fact, I don't intend to sit here throughout the January window reacting in the moment to every single transfer rumour that comes out, because for one, I think it's kind of unnecessary. The rumours will already be out there wherever they're published. Two, I'm not, you know, with the best will in the world, and we're blown away by how many people are signing up, but I think it would take a staggering sign up rate for it to be a full-time wage for me, and I cannot
£5 a month sit, yes, definitely,
yeah, exactly. So I cannot sit there 9 to 5, 5 days a week as I do currently, looking for anything that comes out on Huddersfield Town. But you will keep getting all the reaction, all the analysis. You know, if there is a legitimate transfer link, we will do the scouting pieces and what you can expect from that signing. We will obviously have our say on what is happening in transfer wise, and off the pitch and with the stadium and all of these things. And you are not going to get sort of that level of coverage and analysis anywhere else, I think it's fair to say. Even if there is, you know, still some, there is obviously still a print obligation on the Examiner end, I don't think that there is going to be that level of in-depth analysis of all the games, shall we say. Not necessarily going to be people at the games for the Examiner from now on.
No. And I mean, rather than sort of talk about that, that's for other people to make their mind up. Just sort of kind of be rest assured that we're coming from the right place with this. It's not a cynical... If it was a cynical venture, let me tell you, it'd be a lot more than a fiver. But we are... It is genuinely coming from a place of we do enjoy doing this. Like, to back that up, as Steve will testify, I have never earned a penny from doing this podcast in all the time I've done it. I don't get paid for it. I just do it.
No, I buy you a case of Miller Genuine Draft twice a year.
Twice a year, yeah. That's what I get for it, yeah. And to be honest with you...
Out my own pocket.
To be honest with you, that's a fine payment, but... you know, it is just literally a case of it's something we actually like doing. So
yeah,
we want to carry on doing it, but we just can't do it without a bit of backing at this point. So
yeah, exactly.
But yeah, we're excited now. We're excited. We've got the sad bit out of the way and we're now excited.
We'll also do player ratings. I'll do player ratings for each game. Those will go out for free because I want that to be a promotional thing. I want people to be aware that we're there. So don't be offended or upset and think that, you know, that's something everyone will get, just to help get more eyes on, because the more people that sign up to this, the more likely it is to stay as a going concern. Yeah. I want to say thank you as well to everyone who supported, likes of Football 365 who have helped promote, and Sarah Winterburn, who I owe a lot to. I also want to thank Ali Maxwell from Not the Top 20, who's been a massive, massive help and has given a lot of good advice about how best to run a Substack. Above all else, Huddersfield Town have been excellent with me, and I'm not sure how much they'll appreciate me saying that, but I really have to say Town have been like so incredibly supportive throughout this whole thing, so I do want to put my thanks on record to them, as well as a club. And now we are going to slate them for 45 minutes, Dave. No, not really. Because actually, Saturday's game, I think you and I came away feeling pretty good about it. Huddersfield Town won, Southampton won. And to me, I think Darren Moore and his side, I'm not saying answered the criticisms in a, well, that's every criticism gone away now. Everything is fine forever from here on in. But I think a lot of the things that people complained about Hull, we actually started to see addressed in this game.
Yeah, I think like one of the things we kind of wanted to see is that if we're not going to see something new, you know, something sort of innovative or quite all that out there, it would be nice to just see a response. And I think there was a big response in this game, and I think there's quite a lot to talk about, but Southampton are they're a decent scalp, and a win would have been incredible. To get a draw at home, you know, I saw one or two people saying, yeah, but it is only a point at home. But you have to understand the golf in... I mean, I said to you before kickoff, when we got the team sheets, I was looking at the Southampton team sheet, and, you know, they had Ross Stewart, Che Adams, they had Carlos Alcaraz, a couple of others that, I'm sorry, but they do walk into Town's first team without a shadow of a doubt. You know, I like Shea Charles, the young midfielder. It was a huge ask. It was a huge, huge ask. And to sort of come out of it and almost slightly Warnock their way to victory, because this is how, you know, this is how we saw them do it a couple of times last season, to be honest, would have been incredible. To get the draw is enough. And that's what we kind of needed from this game, was just enough, and we got that.
Yeah, I think there's this... I'd sort of alluded to this in the conclusions, and then I listened to the interviews that Ready Leeds did, and I'm sort of doubling down on it. I think there's a bit of a perception, and I assume, by the way, Oggy is responding to the text that he's had from the fans, etc. But there seems to be a perception that the first half was rubbish and they just tried to park the bus. And then second half, they actually came out and had a go. And I don't think that's true at all. You and I went in at half-time, Dave, and we were saying, actually, that was all right. The goals are sitting there. Awful time to concede. But that you can see that they're trying to do something different. They're trying to play on the counter. I know they only had one shot in the first half, but they had multiple opportunities where, you know, there's one over the top for Josh Caroma, where he got one-on-one with the keeper but couldn't quite get it away. There was Headley going to round the keeper but then getting caught offside. There were multiple opportunities that Town had in that first half that didn't result in shots, but where they were pushing up the field, they were creating openings. We had Jonathan Hogg pressing as a second number nine. We had Matty Pearson coming into midfield to cover for him. You had the wing backs getting forward as often as they could. And I know that there were some moments like Yutanakiyama getting up the left hand side, and then the ball ends up back with Chris Maxwell, and the fans up in arms. And again, contextually, you can sort of understand the frustration, having just seen the performance that they got against Hull, and to a lesser extent against Watford, where it really was sort of devoid of all ambition beyond playing for a 0-0. But I didn't think this was that. I thought they were trying to have a go first half. But you and I, the comment we both made at half time was, you can see they're having a go, but they've got nothing in the final third. So for that goal to come eventually, as it did, was like, yes, this is the only way this side is going to score at the moment. Which is, there's positives and negatives to that, I think.
Yeah, the conversation I had with you at half time, and with Mel Booth actually, was that it was just a bit depressing, because they'd played pretty well. And it was just going 1-0 down. It was like, how do they go and bloody their nose now? How? Because it is that lack of personnel. You know, there was it's not just the fact that they're losing players to injury and the squad has gone incredibly thin, but it's the lack of confidence as well. You know, there's that one where the ball over to Josh Caroma over the top, and he just never at any point kind of looked in charge of the situation in the way like a really confident Josh Caroma would be.
I thought he did grow in confidence as the game went on, but I thought they all did.
Because I thought the difference was they all started to believe a bit, and I thought it was important on a few different levels. But I think the nature of the first half performance was, I wouldn't try and sell it as great or anything like that, but I thought it were fine. You know, like, I completely kind of get it. You know, you can say what you want about the Watford game and how good or bad you think Watford are, and you can say what you think about the Hull game, but Southampton are like a really high passing possession side.
Yeah, the highest in the league.
With lots of ways to hurt you, and 20 million quid's worth of striker on the bench, I can't think of another way you could have realistically played that first half. And then I almost think that the goal didn't change things. It almost felt to me a little bit like the plan was in the second half to try and go for it a bit more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they did, and they got their rewards. And there was a couple of, I thought, really good individual performances in there as well.
Yeah, it's exactly what Darren Moore said. He said, weirdly, that goal just before our time didn't change his team talk or his approach whatsoever. I mean, you could see second half, the back line was pushed sort of 10, 15 yards higher. And, you know, we sort of made the comment, I don't think I've ever seen a team have 20-something percent possession but dominate the game as much as Town did, because it didn't feel like they had 20% possession, because they had all the chances, really, apart from one save that Chris Maxwell's had to make. They've, you know, all the chances have gone Town's way. They should have been level before they actually got level. I think that you pointed out to me, I thought the Helic miss was not a great one, but you pointed out it's a more difficult header than it first looks. But the Sorba Thomas one, he should put away, for sure.
The Helic one, he's got to get the power into it from coming slightly behind it, and if you don't get your body right as you jump, then you've no chance, basically. But the Sorba Thomas one, he can see that all the way onto his head, all the way onto his head, and it's not. Do you know what? It's not the fact that he hasn't scored. It's the fact that he hasn't hit the target.
Yeah, exactly.
Where you're like, oh, Sorba, you know. But it was kind of indicative of his game, because, again, I thought he had a game where, in moments, he was the best player on the pitch, which against Southampton is high praise. And there were other moments where he looked a little bit like a fish out of water. And I kind of think with Sorba at the moment, that's where we are. And you kind of have to put up with one, because you know you're going to get the other as well. So you think, okay, it's a sacrifice that we're kind of willing to make. But it's just, that header, I must admit, I thought that header was the moment. Yeah. I thought, okay, that was the moment. They've not taken it. But we can still kind of reward them for having a go this half, and they've been much better. And I'm just thankful they did get the goal that they... I mean, categorically, I don't care about possession stats or passes in this instance. They categorically deserved that equaliser. And I mean, my God, how long has it been since we've been able to say that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's the first time they've come from behind to get a point since Coventry, I think. So, you know, that's how long it is. And I think this probably was quite like the Coventry game in some ways, but against a much better side at the moment than Coventry, who, let's be honest, have been poor this season. So, mind you, they've got a big... They look like they've turned the corner now. But, I thought there was a lot of encouragement. As you say, they totally deserved it. I think I want to ask you, actually, while we're on Sorba Thomas, I'm generally not a fan of him playing on the left, but I could see the logic of it, particularly after talking to someone earlier. I could see the logic of it in this game where Southampton were playing such a high line, because him playing on the left, he started on the right, but then after Keane Harrott went off, he got switched over to the left. And putting him there meant that actually with Southampton playing such a high line, he gave Town what they haven't had for all season, basically, which is someone to play that out ball over the top. So they could get it to him, and he could, rather than going on the outside and going up the wing, he would come inside and play a ball over the top. And not all of them came off. There's one in particular where I think Town would have had a 2-on-1 or a 2-on-2, if you count the keeper, if he'd got the ball right to Headley, and he completely overhit it. But there were others where he did get it right, and it really put Town on the front foot. And it was as a result of him sort of coming into that central position that he was able to apply that pass.
Yeah, I think the thing is that we saw it was the Birmingham game, wasn't it, last season, where he was used in that central role, and you realised how good he is at just spreading a defence, basically, and just pushing a defence. I think he's more flexible than we give him credit for. Yeah. I think the thing about Sorba is, and I've said it before on this podcast, and I'll say it again, that the problem that Town have is when he's in form, he immediately gets doubled up on. And teams can do that because they don't feel like Town are going to hurt them in other areas, so they can just move someone across to double up. So he's always taking two men on. If he's having a good game, he's always got, you know, double the shift of somebody else in terms of trying to get round their man. I think switching him and sort of getting him to ask different questions of different players, I think, is a good thing. And it's horses for courses, isn't it? I'm like you. Mm. I think it was the right thing to do in the circumstances. I mean, Harrott going off, like, we'll talk about the obvious thing we need to talk about there. I thought it was quite a weird way he did his hammy. He was sort of going for a ball that he was never in a million years going to get, and sort of coming round the wrong side of the defender. It was an odd choice that ended badly. But then I thought tactically from there, they kind of switched. They went into a more flat 5-4-1, and there was a lot more of a gap between the lines as well, for obvious reasons. But I kind of think it was the only thing they could do in that yeah. circumstance. And Sauber's like probably the person who really makes it work. You know, it, on or off the ball, he becomes the key person in that formation, really.
Yeah, I think it was... Bearing in mind, Bergsorg, as Darren Moore explained, had trained 45 minutes on Friday before the game, and that was it. Mm. So he was coming back from injury. He wasn't capable of doing much. And to be honest, I thought it was patently obvious what that switch was. And normally, if the crowd does a particularly big response, I will note it in the live blog that we do. And I didn't on this occasion because I actually thought, oh, is that coming from the Southampton fans? Has the referee done something that I've missed? Because I couldn't believe that it was the town fans responding to the substitution. Because it was obvious what the switch was. It was pretty obvious that he wasn't going to play Yuta Nakayama up front, and he wasn't going to play without a striker. It was obvious that he was going to put Kroma up front, Headley on the wing, and Nakayama at left wing back. So for it to get that response just felt to me like... people who were waiting for the first opportunity to have a go at Darren Moore rather than people that were making a genuine criticism based on what they'd seen, to be honest.
I think the thing is that response was not a response just to that decision. We completely get that. It's a response to the Leeds game. It's response, to be frank, it's a response to a couple of years of underinvestment. It's a response to lots and lots of things. But like, Bergsorg couldn't have played that amount of minutes. Diarra, you can't. He gives the ball away too much to put him on at that moment in that game and basically have over an hour where you're kind of trusting him to suddenly become somebody who can hang on to the ball.
And he's less of a centre forward than Josh Caroma is.
Yeah, and you know, Southampton like to hog the ball, it's what they do. So you don't you need a point where it sticks really as much as possible. And let's be honest, that wasn't happening for Harrit either. Harrit was really struggling in that game. He just, the ball was bouncing off him. He couldn't get a foothold in it. So it's like, well, what's the alternative? Get Tom Edwards on up front? It's I'm saying it flippantly, but I mean, I'm kind of like you. I don't think there was any other choice. I mean, they had a bench of seven, which is one more than the last home game because the injuries are still, the list is still as bad. They lost Danny Ward, you know, at the last minute, who we think probably would have started. They were once again in the situation of kind of putting together a bench of what they had left rather than what they wanted on there. And unfortunately, when that's your position, the changes are kind of, you know, forced upon you rather than things you can do to sort of try and change the game, really. So, yeah, I don't, as I said, I'm not going to turn around and like massively have a go at the fans, but I am going to say, like, I also don't know what sort of value it had, because it doesn't really help the lad coming on, doesn't help the lad going off, doesn't help the team as a whole. And it's so early in the game. It's like, well, you need to see kind of how it pans out. But what I would say is, it was far from every Town fan. And I've had a lot of reports from people in other stands who said, you know, there were little groups that replied immediately with positive chants and what have you. Yeah. I know there were quite a few Town fans who were quite unimpressed with it themselves.
It sounded like it came from one end, and it was... A percentage of that end rather than en masse all four sides of the ground, wasn't it? But I think I'm as I said in the conclusions, I'm getting up on my high horse about it now and about that specific booing, but I think it is reflective of the poor start that Darren Moore has made. Obviously, you know, it's 1-win in 10, which is not a particularly defensible record, even with, you know, all the mitigating factors he's got in his favour. And I agree, I think it, more than anything, it's a response to Hull, because I think people just saw centre-forward going off, defender coming on, and thinking, oh, he's going to try and, you know, park the bus now. But I didn't think the evidence of the game up to that point suggested that that was going to be his approach. And it wasn't his approach. I mean, Headley has played on the wing plenty of times. It's not like that was a surprise that Jaheim Headley moved to the wing. I think Neil Warnock played him there more often than not, actually. But I do understand more generally that sense of the lack of trust in Darren Moore. And I think that is something that, unfortunately, he and the club are going to have to stick out for a while longer. Even if they were to come out and beat Sunderland, I think probably the next home game, if a similar decision gets made, there will be similar grumbling. And there will be for a little while until they've actually found themselves in a decent run of form. It's just one of those things, really, isn't it?
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. Like I say, people pay their money. They're free to do what they want, and they don't have to listen to us at all. But I think the one thing I'd say about Darren Moore, and I don't want to get into like a sort of Warnock v. Moore thing or anything like that, but I kind of look at Darren Moore and I look at what he's done and I kind of think there are moments where I would have done things differently. I genuinely wouldn't have played that Hull game all the way through like he did. I can completely understand doing that for 60 minutes, but there is a point where I think you can change it, as we saw on Saturday, and you can just try. There are ways to lose games. We've talked about it here before, haven't we? There are ways to come away from games like that and feel like you've had a go. So I'm not for a second saying I would have done things like, you know, completely differently or anything like that. But there are things I would have done different. But there are, I can justify Darren Moore's approach is the thing. When you look at the squad he's had, the players he's had available, the fixture list he's had, I think the thing is, the problem me and you have before we even think about going two-footed is we go, well, yeah, all right, yeah, I can understand that. There wasn't really a sort of perfect solution there. So we've ended up with something that might feel a bit clumsy or might not have worked. But on paper, I'm not too sure what else there was.
I think there's games, as you say, where that's, I mean, I don't think either of us would have picked Tom Edwards, for instance. And we talked about it before last, I think, or possibly the last podcast, where there are things that I think, because he was learning the squad on the job and in such a short space of time, he did make some strange decisions that I think probably even he wouldn't make now if he was picking the teams again with the same injury list, etc. But again, it's once again that my main point more than anything is, even if you're not a big believer in Darren Moore, I still don't think that sacking him now would achieve anything. I don't think getting on his back now particularly achieves anything. And again, that's not us telling people what to do. I'm just giving our own take on it. But I don't think getting on his back particularly achieves anything at the moment. I think you and I have been saying since he was appointed, he needs to get through to the January transfer window. I think this game, I sort of see where I do slightly disagree with Darren Moore from what he said on Saturday at the press conference, was he was saying, I don't think there was a massive difference between this game and Hull. I think it was a good performance against Hull and a good performance against Southampton, but we concede a late goal against Hull and we score a late goal against Southampton and suddenly it's night and day. And I think if you went through the players in a player ratings kind of way and gave individual marks, you would probably say, yes, everyone stuck to their jobs against Hull. And they did, same as against Watford. And, you know, we gave plenty of 7 out of 10s in both of those games. A fair few 8s in the Watford game, in fact. But they were given briefs that were entirely defensive. And that was what rankled with a lot of fans, particularly having lost against Hull. Because if you do that, as we said last week, if you do that and then lose, then you've got nothing to hold on to. Whereas here, they didn't do that. They went for it. You know, it did remind me, actually, if we're drawing comparisons to last season, of the Norwich game last year, where it was that second half performance that makes you go, oh, actually, maybe there is something here. You know, all hope has been lost. We've had a couple of games that are frustrating, but now actually they're starting to come out of their shell a little bit more. Because let's not forget, this is exactly what Neil Warnock did last year after they lost those games 4-0 and 4-0. He set up against Bristol City and West Brom just to try and get a 0-0 and try and just be like, okay, well, let's prove that we can actually get clean sheets. And then it was only sort of that second half against Norwich where they came out and really, basically, similarly, battered Norwich despite having less of the ball and playing on the counter and ended up coming from behind to get a 1-1 draw. So that's the other aspect is, you know, you say it's, we don't want to make it Warnock versus Moore, and neither of us do. We've sort of intentionally shied away from that because I don't think it's helpful in any kind of analysis. Nah. But if you are playing that game, I think you need to look at how Neil Warnock did approach it last season, and I think he sort of did the same thing. And I think, again, I feel similarly from this game, albeit much earlier in the season, that I did against Norwich, which is, even if you'd sort of lost all hope last season, I think there was enough in that second half performance to think, actually, there might be something here. And I'm looking at that Southampton second half and thinking, actually, there might be something here now that they've got Josh Caroma back, now that they've got Sauber Thomas on form, now they've got Ben Jackson on really, really good form. You know, they're getting more attacking players back. Jack Redoni won't be out forever. Yes, they obviously need signings, but I'm starting to think maybe the worst might be over. We can't say it for sure, but there were some hints that maybe it might be.
I think the next game is key, really. Yeah. We'll see what happens, because I think, again, like, away to Sunderland is quite a big ask at the moment. Mm-hmm. They are, I think with Sunderland, they're an extremely capable side who have off days. So you've got to try and catch them on their off day. And
they had one on Saturday.
Yeah, let's see what happens. But I think it's also worth, bear in mind, there are other Town podcasts out there. I am going to shout him out, actually. I don't usually listen to Andy Takes That Chance before doing ours, because you don't want to repeat views or parrot views. But Richard Cosmala on there this week is very, very good from a fan point of view on both the booing and the sort of looking at Darren Moore as a whole. Mm-hmm. And I thought he gave a very balanced, very rounded view on it. That kind of, it made me kind of assess some conversations I've had with fans and other people as well. So, yeah, I would say listen to that and then immediately subscribe to We Are Terriers.
Substack.com. I think there are some more individuals that we probably need to talk about in a positive way. Ben Jackson, obviously, we've given a lot of love over the past couple of weeks, but again, I thought he was outstanding. I thought he deserved his goal entirely. Both ends of the pitch, he was really good. I know the goal came off his side, but I've watched the goal back several times, and I don't think, apart from Mihal Helic letting Adam Armstrong get the run on him, I don't think anyone in a township particularly does anything wrong. I think it's just a good move and a brilliant pass from Will Smallbone over the top to find Stuart Armstrong. It's the kind of goal that a team like Southampton will score against you, no matter how solid you are, unfortunately. Helic should do better, but other than that. But Jackson, I thought excellent again, and we'd be repeating ourselves, but it does need to be noted. It's really coming together for him the last three games.
Yeah, I think the sort of hard work has never been in doubt. He's kind of been a victim of being too adaptable and too adept in too many positions, really. I think, if I remember rightly, even in his last press conference, that's one thing Warnock said. He's just, the problem is he's too good in too many positions that you don't know where to pick him, and he ends up not being a specialist in any of them. The weird thing is, we're still not 100% sure that's his position longer term, but he's really doing his best at making his own at the moment. He works incredibly hard through the game, incredibly hard. The intelligence is coming.
Yeah.
You know, he's dropping into the right areas defensively and then trying to get into the right areas on the front foot. And I thought, the thing about the goal is, I know it's a cross that goes in. No one's going to pretend it's anything else, but it's like a cross into that, I hate to use a cliche, but you're trying to hit that corridor of uncertainty.
Yeah.
And I think, even if it doesn't go in, you sort of have to know it's a great ball. You know, it's a ball right where, if you're a striker, they're right. That's the area you really want it to be coming in.
There's a reason that the keeper doesn't commit to it, and it's because he's worried that Matty Pearson's going to connect to it.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I thought it was a really good goal. I thought he clearly enjoyed it. Loved his celebration. Yeah. I kind of feel I had this conversation with you as well. I almost feel, with Ben Jackson's form, the way it's going, and Ollie Turton with a return sort of potentially coming a little bit closer, I kind of almost feel that, not that right back isn't a priority or anything like that, I'm sure they could do with another right back at the club, but it kind of feels like it's gone down that transfer list a bit now.
Yeah.
You know, it could arguably be, for me, like the fourth of four transfers they desperately need to do now, whereas a couple of weeks ago it felt like first or second.
Yeah, definitely. We were saying, oh, Matty Pearson needs to go back there for a bit, but yeah, Jackson stalled it. I think the best bit of the goal for me is not even the cross, although I will mention Matty Pearson, he did that. He did cause the keeper to second guess. It's actually a lovely dummy run from him as a second centre forward alongside Delano Bergzug. But the run and pat, the run by Diarra, he's literally right dead centre in the, you know, facing goal. You know, level with the goalkeeper kind of thing, central. And he just sort of points twice out to the corner flag and Jackson sees it and plays that ball basically into the corner down to the byline for Diarra well early, before anyone in a Southampton shirt has even seen it. It's a great run and a brilliant pass, and like, you can laugh at Diarra getting the assist for that, basically passing it back to someone to cross it, but I think he deserves it for that, for that run and getting there, and Jackson deserves the goal for making that pass. It's a, you know, it's the kind of thing that if a player, I remember Gary Lineker once talking about how he used to make 30 runs a game, and no one notices the ones that don't come off, and players are sort of, you end up on a almost a psychic level with players, and if a player plays a pass to a striker who isn't there, it's because he normally is. And that's the kind of pass from Jackson where if Diarra hasn't made that run, you're, the crowd are all groaning going, who the f***, who are you passing it there to there, Ben Jackson? You know, why
that
you
slipped out. Yeah. That slipped out on our final ever pod, yeah, didn't it?
Who are you passing it to there, Ben Jackson? And he looks really stupid, but yeah, it's a lovely bit of movement. And it's the kind of thing that, to be honest, you want your team doing multiple times a game. It's silly that we're giving it a big shout out in, you know, but that's the kind of thing that's been missing from the attack. The kind of thing that I think comes from the training ground. And to be honest, these two players are fairly familiar with each other because they've been playing B team football together for years, in between loan spells. So yeah, I think Diarra was the one who, when I looked at the replays, did better than I gave him credit for on the day. I think his movement was really good, and I would be looking at that Sunderland game and thinking he did a really good job against Sunderland last year. Do you put him in again on Wednesday night? But Josh Caroma, a player who isn't your favourite a lot of the time, Dave. You were full of praise for him after Saturday.
Yeah, it's not from a case of, don't get me wrong, it's not from a place where I think he's a bad player or anything. He just frustrates me so much because all the talent in the world, Steve, all the talent in the world. You know, when he's on form, he can be championship level unplayable. And you can ask, I don't know, like Sheffield United about that from last season. But he has struggled. I always feel with him that kind of everything has to be right for him to play well. You know, like, all the pieces have to be in line. And I think on Saturday, I don't think that was like vintage Josh Caroma or,
no,
you know, he was playing anything like his best, but his work rate was significantly up. He was covering every blade of grass he could. And that is a really good sign for me with Josh Caroma. That's a sign that he's sort of back to that, really trying to get into different areas, you know, really trying to get into those pockets of space. When he frustrates me, it's when he pulls out to the wing, because all he wants to do is basically pull out so that he can cut inside and try and get the ball onto his right foot and curl it. He wasn't doing that, you know, he was trying to stretch them, he was trying to run them. He's a very different type of forward to other forwards Town have got, which is why it's frustrating when he kind of doesn't play anything like his potential. But I thought there were some really positive signs there. And I mean, ultimately, let's be honest, he may well be needed through the middle now, because we don't know what the situation is with Danny Ward. And even we know what Danny Ward is like when he comes back. He cannot play 90 minutes three times in a fortnight, you know, no problem. He's going to have an hour and off. You know, an hour and off, and then see if you can get 90 minutes, but judge it even then. So with no Kean Harrott, you know, we know he's gone off with an injury. We know Hudlin's carrying a knock. So, yeah, it's kind of important that he gets somewhere near that form again. And I just felt that he tried to push defenders into areas they aren't comfortable. And that's what I want to see from a striker who's not getting loads of time on the ball, not getting loads of chances. I just want to see them making life as uncomfortable for those defenders as possibly can. And that's just, I felt he just did that better than I've seen for quite a while.
Yeah. The other player I wanted to mention quickly was, and I sort of didn't expect this from him playing alongside Kasumu, but Jonathan Hogg. I can't remember the last time he was in attacking areas either on or off the ball quite as often as he was. I think you and I both do, Hoggy playing as the first presser, the one who goes up and joins the striker in the press. I think that suits him quite well. And he was doing that right from the off in this game. But he was also on the ball. There were two or three times where I wasn't sure who had been, you know, was the other man outside the box who was picking up the square balls. For instance, one of the Caroma ones where he went through, the player he ended up passing it to square just outside the box was Jonathan Hogg. And it was like, oh, that's not quite who I expected. It's, you know, he's turning 35 in a couple of weeks, and he's, we're seeing sort of surprising things from him. Even at this stage, I think he has ways of pleasantly surprising me. And again, don't think it was sort of a vintage performance or anything, but I think we always say he's sort of the bellwether of Huddersfield Town and sort of the weather vane for how their form is going and where the players' mood is at. And I think, apart from anything else, this performance and coming from behind and putting in this showing and carrying out the plan, the game plan as they did, because something we've not even mentioned, by the way, all four of Darren Moore's subs were forced changes in this game. And we know that at least two of them would have been planned because of the players that had to go off, as in Karoma and Kasumi, who were never going to be able to complete 90 minutes. But even with that taken into account, the players sort of saw out the game plan. So I think there is some suggestion there that the players haven't given up the fight. They've not given up belief, and you know, they're sort of, they're on board with this.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I think the thing that we like about it, I mean, this sounds like damning with faint praise, it really isn't. This is a proper logistical tactical point, but one of the reasons we like Hoggy in that press is because it then means he can't get done for pacing behind.
Yeah,
you know, if he's sitting, because when he sits now, he's at a point in his career where he is 35 years old. He basically drops into the back line. He doesn't press in front of them anymore, and it's just a case of age. So using him that way, yeah, I really like. And I sort of came off, I just felt in that second half you could see that they came out and the effort was there, but then by the end the belief was there. And I can't remember the last time I saw Huddersfield Town, even when they were winning, it kind of with that belief mindset. So I mean, long may it continue. Who knows, it could go hideously wrong at Sunderland and they could get beat for 4 or 5. I've no idea where it goes from here. I've given up trying to second guess this side and this squad, but it just felt like we got something on Saturday. We got something to talk about, Steve. I mean, we've struggled the last couple of podcasts because there hasn't been an awful lot to say. And, you know, finally we saw something from the dugout, we saw something on the pitch, there was something in the result to talk about, and yeah, it just felt better, didn't it?
It did. I think we've also seen, and I think there was a bit of forward planning with this, that it is 5-4-1 off the ball still, but it is becoming more and more of, well, I say more and more, there was a distinct difference between the whole game and this game where it did become properly a sort of a 3-4-3 stroke 3-4-2-1. And I think that is a natural evolution, obviously, out of the 5-4-1, because the 3-4-3 always ends up sort of being that off the ball anyway. And I think, again, I think judging from sort of some of the fan reaction, I think there's this perception that 5-4-1 is an inherently negative defensive tactic, but there are ways of springing the attack from it. You know, Chelsea were extremely successful under Antonio Conte, as were Italy, playing at what was essentially a 5-4-1 off the ball, because you can very quickly turn it into that 3-4-3 shape if you have the right wing backs. And I think Headley, by the way, is really important to that if he's playing, or potentially really important, whether that's on the wing or at wing back. I think Jackson is important to it. But I think the thing that has enabled it now that they didn't have before is getting Josh Karoma and or Delano Bergsorg back, because I just don't think they had the personnel to do it before. And I, again, you just hope against Sunderland. I mean, I'd be again tempted to go even more so, just sort of pick up where they left off in that second half and just take it to Sunderland, because that's what, again, what Neil Warnock did last year. He'd been quite defensive and then suddenly went, do you know what, we're going to take it to Sunderland and pen them in and press them really aggressively. I think Town enjoy doing that. I think it's a style that suits this squad. Why not do it again on Wednesday? Because I don't think they've got anything to lose from giving it a go.
No. And I mean, if you lose 2-0, but you've had a go, I just think from the fans' point of view, it feels better as well.
Yeah.
I just, losing 1-0 at Hull, the reason that was taken so badly, and it's still kind of resonating across the fan base, is because not only have you lost, you've not even tried. Yeah. That's how it feels anyway. I'm not for a minute
or not tried to
players
score,
haven't
at
tried.
Least.
Yeah, but that's how it feels as a fan. So if you're going to go, you want to kind of go down scrapping. And we know that Huddersfield Town, as a fan base, they want to see a fight. You know, they that's the one thing they need to see on the pitch, is a bit of themselves. So, yeah, I'm with you. Just I think just try and go for it. And if, if you get beat but you go down fighting, fair enough. It's just then what you don't want to happen is 20 minutes gone and it's Sunderland 2 Huddersfield Town 0.
Yeah.
Because then you've got like a horrible decision about what you have to do next. But yeah, I just can't predict this side anymore, Steve.
No.
Honestly, I have given up even trying. You know, games I think they've got a chance of getting something, they completely fluff their lines. Games we write them off, they get a draw.
Yeah.
I've given up.
Yeah. I think we again, don't want to keep banging on about it. And these are two, I mean, a long away trip like that, and particularly on a tight turnaround from a Wednesday away in Sunderland to a Saturday away in Swansea, I think the swing from one fixture to another in terms of fatigue and all the things we talked about in Carlos's second season, it really doesn't get much worse. So I'm sort of expecting to lose at least one of those games in truth, if not both. But I think, you said a couple of weeks ago, if they got 1 point against, you know, from nine, then that was good going, and they've already got that now. But then they're into two home games against Bristol City and Preston that, you know, they really do need to get something out of. They need to win at least
the Bristol one. Yeah, the Bristol one, they need to, like, I mean, don't get me wrong, any game in the Championship is difficult, but they really have got to try and win that. That has to be sort of ringed in red, really, as try and go for that one. Preston are a weird side.
Yeah.
Preston are a very weird side. They're very functional, is a word I use a lot when I'm talking about Preston, and they're sort of still that. So, but I think Town could get something from them. But yeah, we are still in the same position, aren't we? Which is like, until we get into that transfer window and we see some additions to this squad, it really does feel like,
yeah,
it really does feel like it's very difficult to do anything but sort of live from week to week.
And they need some wins. Again, you know,
yeah,
we've been quite positive, but we are well aware that it's one win in 10 games for Town. And that is, if it were any other season, I think that would not be enough. But as we've said before, the three teams at the bottom have been so absolutely rancid. And I know Rotherham got a good result on Friday, but, you know, they've been a cut below the rest, haven't they, those three? And that is definitely helping with our relative positivity compared with the fan base, because I think you and I are sort of a mind that actually they probably won't need loads in the January transfer window. And we'll talk more about the January transfer window next month. So I'm not going to delve into that now. But I think, as a spoiler, you and I both think they probably only need sort of two or three. And I don't think they even need particularly amazing signings. I think they just need decent players to add a bit more depth, you know, a bit more competence in the final third, and experience. But there we go.
Work that loan system. That would be my advice. Work that loan system.
And I think you and I sort of think, you know, as long as things don't go disastrously wrong throughout December, if they can get to January, they'll probably get what they need and they'll probably be fine. But we always have time to revise that opinion, and we'll see what the next few games bring. And we will cover what those next few games bring after Sunderland on weareterriers.substack.com.
Yeah, feels weird now, doesn't it? Signing off.
Yeah, we'll see everyone on the other side.
Yeah, I thought it was delightful that we've done this podcast for years now, and on the very final one, by mistake, you let out a Champions League level swear word completely by mistake.
But yeah, well, why not? I will censor it, but I'm going to leave it in. I'm not even going to cut it out, because what are they going to do?
Our media recommendation is a joint one, isn't it?
Is it weareterriers.substack.com?
Yeah, we are Terriers, that's it.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the name that we definitely remember and is definitely tripping off the tongue. Lovely. Right. Thank you again to everyone who's subscribed and shared already. And look out for, I will probably put a launch email in your inbox either tonight or tomorrow morning. So sorry if you're getting the message twice, but I'm sure you can appreciate we need to promote this thing. Bye.
See you there.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.